This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We got them screaming D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo. We got them screaming D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, D-Lo. We your number one spot. We your number one spot for some sports, huh? Got the city going crazy when we work, huh? We top two, but we ain't two, we in first, huh? And when you need the real, we is who you search, huh? D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo. We your number one spot.
How y'all feeling today? How y'all feeling? How y'all feeling? How y'all feeling? One more time. What's good? Come on, man. Hang out. Get comfortable. We are here with you for the next 4 hours on this Thursday, April 18th edition of D-Lo and KC. I am Damian Boerling.
The ultimate needle mover in God Mode himself.
He is courtside Kenny Caraway.
Yes, sir.
Acknowledge me.
Man, and we appreciate you so much for being with us on the eve of the Sacramento Kings' second play-in game in New Orleans, on the eve of our next live broadcast.
Yeah.
Sky River Casino, 32 Brew Street. We hope that you will come hang out with us, spend some time with us, spend your day with us. We're going to be doing our live show there from 12 to 4. And then you're already there. Why leave?
Yeah.
Game starts at 6:30. The food is amazing. The drinks are amazing.
Yes.
You want to kill some time? We could go hit the tables, go hit the slots before 6:30 hits.
Whatever you win, I get at least 10% of. Those are the rules.
So whatever you win, the Chatty House gets 10% of.
That is not the rule.
Oh. Well, you Don King?
What? When America gets money, do they give it to us? No.
Oh, they definitely don't.
But when you make money, you got to give it to America.
So you're, just to be clear, you're America in this situation?
I'm Kenny.
Oh.
Okay. I'm starting my own country.
Well, okay. You know what? Before we get too far into this election season, let me apply for citizenship. How do I become a Kenny? What do you call it if you're a buddy?
We're still working on a name.
Okay. All right. I'm in. I don't even care. I'm in. Hey, Aldrin J says, make Kenny great again.
I'm seceding from all of this. And I'm
that's
just
fine.
Just going to go do my own thing.
That's fine.
Off the grid.
That's fine. You do that, and I'll just break off and fall into the ocean, and we'll call it a day. We will call it a day, man. We are going to get you ready for tomorrow night's game. This Thursday is going to look a little bit different. Then some of our other Thursdays do. Matt George can't be with us. He's on a flight right now. He's making his very first trip ever to New Orleans right now.
You been to New Orleans before?
I have. Yeah,
you
I went
like it?
For.
Oh, yeah, you went for All-Star Weekend.
I did. Well.
Woo! Woo!
I think I've been twice. God, I can't remember. Yeah, I have been twice. So the first time I went, it was that All-Star game. That was shortly after Katrina. And I remember it was devastating. It was stunning to see because I did the NBA Cares thing. And that's where I met Magic for the first time. But they took us to a neighborhood that had it was decimated. and we were the project was rebuilding this woman's house who had lived there for like forever, right? She had lived there like 40 years or whatever. So they were trying to preserve her house. She was literally the only one there. Mm. It was the only house that was going to be preserved. And as we were driving, it was, you know, it was probably six people in the car and the driver. And I asked the driver, I was like, yo, what do all of those symbols on the boards mean? Worst question I could have asked. Because he told me.
That's tough.
And the symbols were, they stood for whether the house had been searched, mm-hmm. whether there were bodies inside, and whether there were animals inside. It was gutting. Because mm-hmm. as we were driving, going to this house, I realized that's every single house we're looking at. Like, every single one. Went back a couple of years later. Trip was a little, it was, I think it was for All-Star Weekend again, but trip was a little bit different that time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that first trip was oof.
I couldn't imagine that one. I said, I was there, told it before, but I was there a couple days before.
Yeah, what'd you do on that trip to New Orleans again?
Which one?
Wasn't that the one where you took the famous boat ride?
No,
that was a different trip.
The first time I was there, but one of the more recent times I was there was literally, I talked about this, it was like 3 days before Katrina hit. I mean, Katrina didn't hit. Like, there was rainfall mm-hmm. for like a week or so, and then it got progressively worse. But we were there like 3-4 days before. And my mom, shout out Cheryl on Elk Grove, we were supposed to go back to Atlanta, drive back to Atlanta on like a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And it was like Tuesday. She's like, I think we should just start pushing right now, you know, going to Atlanta or whatever. Get back. It was raining crazy. We get back to Atlanta on like Wednesday. We're there till Friday. We get back to Sacramento on like a Saturday night or a Sunday. As soon as I get back to Sacramento on like Saturday night, turn on CNN. Yeah, they're preparing for, you know, one of the craziest hurricanes ever. And I'm like, yo, I was just there. Like, what in the world? And that's crazy. I didn't go back. Now, this was the time when I took the boat ride down the Mississippi River.
Uh-huh.
And they took us to a plantation.
So you, just to be clear, and you were with family members. So you and your family took a boat ride to a plantation.
Yeah.
That's good. You can't make this up.
And look. Amazing. Dropped us off and let us get out and look at the plantation.
Let you get out and look at the plantation. Do you hear yourself?
It's what happened. Now look.
Did at any point someone go, mm-mm.
This time, mm-mm. They let us back on the boat.
Oh, that was, well.
To go where we wanted to go.
At any point did someone say, hey, we're really chancing this thing here?
When I got off and like saw the plantation, I said, now, first of all, I said I wouldn't have made it. Second of all, I said, let's get back on the boat.
I'm just so.
Let's get back on the boat. It was so hot. It had just finished raining. This was like late July, and it just finished just pouring. Just the skies open crazy. 10 minutes later, sun's out. Everything's good, but obviously, you know, it's just sticky and hot at that point. And then, we're on the boat. We get off the boat, we're on the plantation, and that's what I was like, man, respect to my forefather. This is crazy to have to deal with this, man. You know, and that's just the elements, let alone what you had to deal with. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I had gone back. It was probably maybe 10 years later, maybe even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things have been built, but we went to that area where the levees broke and just seeing those houses, though. Now the way they, you know, make the houses out there, especially in some of these wards, or, you know, these houses are like two stories tall to get to the
they're on stilts.
Front door.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah. It's they also have what are they called, KC? The graveyards.
They're above ground
graveyards. Yep, like because of that.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating place. But seeing those homes on stilts
it was
different.
I love that city, though, man. I love New Orleans.
It's a cool
great time. I got to get back. I wish I was balling like Damian, I'd probably hop on a flight, you know, and
I'm here with
go
you.
To the
what
game.
Do you mean?
Well, I mean, that's just by choice. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got it like that. You know what I'm saying? I could have hopped on a flight. They got $15 tickets to that game tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, they got super affordable tickets. They got tickets in the lower bowl for like, I'm not saying it like it's Trump change, but they got them for like $175.
Well, the get-in price Tuesday was $220.
Yeah. You can get in the building for $15 tomorrow.
Wow.
You can sit lower bowl for like $175.
The one thing about that, like Smoothie King is nothing special. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of there.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of like is it still called the Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, Superdome.
That has a lot more cachet.
It's literally in the shadow of the Superdome.
Right. No, that's a shoot. Yeah. Right. It is. Like you get in the right hotel, your window looks right outside at that gigantic stadium. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great city.
But look at one thing we ain't gonna do here. Mm. We ain't gonna disrespect the Noya. You know what I mean, we'll come down here. We got the Smoothie King. We're going down there. You're playing the Pelicans. I know Zion ain't going to be there, Daddy. But I tell you, they still got B.I. They still got McCollum. They still got McCollum. You know what it is. Don't act like you don't know what I'm saying, Daddy. You know what the verbs is. You know what it is up here, Uptown, Third Ward. Now, we also got Trey Murphy.
One more time. C.J.
C.J. McCollum. You know what it is. Don't do that. I'm going to say it one more time, and that's the last time I'm going to say it. You heard? You know, that's what I said. My man Birdman and them told me how to say it back then, and I know what I'm doing. But they got a good team. My boy Willie Green, he gonna have them boys ready. They're gonna be emotionally ready to go. That crowd gonna be ready to go. It's gonna be a later start. We're gonna be popping up there. It's gonna be a good old time out there, baby. You understand me? It's gonna be feeling like one of them games in the Bayou, baby. It's gonna be feeling like LSU versus Florida. It's gonna be feeling like LSU versus Alabama. It's gonna be feeling like Saints versus Falcons. It's gonna be one of them games. You heard me? Uptown, Third Ward. We're going to Manchu's. We're gonna get us some po' boys. You know what it is after the game.
I just wish you knew like when to hit the stop button. And I recognize that I'm only inviting.
All gas, brakes don't work.
I realize I'm only creating problems when I do this. That's my favorite impression. That's my favorite. That's not even an impression of anybody. I just love that. I just love the New Orleans sound, man. That's good stuff.
Them girls get to talking, they get crazy. When I was younger, I think
New Orleans was my first All-Star game experience. Mm. I think that was the first one I went to. And watching those young ladies dressed the way that they were, walking around, because you know that area down there, yeah, it's not like the smoothest.
Yeah.
It's not the smoothest walk. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
And so imagine those 6-inch heels, you know, dropping into those cobblestones. And they're just trying so hard because they know.
And they didn't have a couple of drinks.
Oh, they know they outside.
A couple of them daiquiris.
And it was not warm that weekend, boy. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was a hell of a. And I've told the story before about coming back from an event with like Darren Williams and a couple of NBA guys, and we saw a crowd of people running towards us, and I thought, oh man, these brothers is about to get mobbed. But C Murder was behind us, and that's who they were running towards. That's where I recognized the power of the No Limit family in New Orleans.
Oh my god,
man.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh my god. So we're gonna talk basketball. We'll talk about what happened last night. Buddy did it.
Come on, man. Give him his air horns, man.
Buddy did it.
Let's go.
We're just getting started, man. It's D-Lo and KC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, someone come get this dude, man. Casey over here.
Yo,
crazy.
Man, y'all crazy, man. We can't even be adults no more, man. This is crazy.
We really can't.
That
was funny, though. That was a good one.
You said it. I kind of waited. No one said anything. He's like, no, that was too crazy.
I had to tell Kenny what was going on with my voice a couple of days ago and had to be like, all right, look, I'm going to need you to be an adult for a second before I tell you this conversation.
Oh, man, that convo got crazy.
No, it didn't.
What is it, like the Oakland Raiders in the 80s, they say it was just leading the league in penalties? That was your thing? That's Kenny. No,
that's absolutely Kenny. Kenny out here wilding. Out here wilding.
Hey, real quick, man, I want to give a shout-out to Sacramento. I want to give a shout-out to Sacramento because – you guys can't see on the stream, but those in the studio, in the office, you see what time it is. It's that time of year. Hoodies and shorts. Let's go. Oh, yeah. Let's go. It's that 3-4 week period before it gets too hot, but it's also warm enough where you can wear the shorts. Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time.
Okay.
It's always hoodie season, too, though, when you work on radio.
Yeah, it'd be cold in here. I understand why it's cold, though.
Bro, I had to get on a call this morning, and I went into the wake-up call studio.
Uh-huh.
Bro, one, it's hot.
Mm.
And two, like, there'd be a fist fight every day if we had to work in that studio. It's a mess.
Oh, man.
There is stuff everywhere.
Are they the only ones in that studio?
They're the only ones in there. Like, it is literally theirs. They're the only ones in there because we lost Ashley. We don't know what happened to her. But, like, I walked in there. There's, like, Gavin got trinkets of himself, like, everywhere. Like, all over the place. It's, like, damn near a shrine to Gavin. It's the weirdest thing.
There's always just a box of stuff in there as well.
Yeah.
Just a box of stuff.
Like, Katie got blankets everywhere. Like, it's a wake-up call. That's a wild place.
You know who I'd never been there, but just by looking at it on TV – That's how the Breakfast Club looks.
Just Breakfast stuff Club all
got
over the place.
A bunch of stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it's organized cast. They also have like a new studio now, but like the old Breakfast Club, it looks small. It looked like a Madison size studio.
Oh my God, a Will Cain studio.
Yeah, just stuff everywhere.
Man, if we had the Will Cain picture, maybe we could have booked The Rock.
Well, I think the picture's somewhere still here.
I think Charlie did.
I probably took it.
I think Charlie dropped the people's elbow on that thing.
Right.
Charlie really does not like Will Cain at all.
Mm.
Not many do.
Yeah, except, no, I'm not a fan.
Except Dwayne. Apparently, this is Dwayne.
That was disappointing.
Dwayne's made a lot of missteps recently, hasn't he?
Well, he's got just that one. What else he got going on?
Well, the Maui thing. I mean,
he explained that.
So when you dip your foot into politics, you're going to piss off, as we've learned, very literally half the country. So The Rock does something he had never done before and endorses Biden and Harris. And he gets a lot of backlash for that. Shortly thereafter, you have the over the last few years, you have the Maui thing. Then he goes on the Will Cain show, which is on Fox News, and says he's not going to endorse Biden and Harris this year. He doesn't endorse anybody, but he's saying that on Fox News.
And his commentary with that, though.
So it's like, kind of crazy. And from my understanding, and that's why, like, I think Dwayne has always been a lifelong Republican. I know that's weird for people because he is a person of color, whether he acknowledges, and if you ask him about being black, he'll talk about it, but he doesn't really... He doesn't really volunteer that information, right? You can find beads or, something to acknowledge his Samoan side, but he ain't gonna make an Under Armour shirt with a fist up on it. Under Armour's Project Rock is never gonna be confused for Actively Black.
No.
But like when he was with Ryan Clark and them guys on the Pivot, he talked about it. Mm. He's just a weird, I don't know.
He is an interesting.
It's just
dude.
The like, I don't know what he's working towards.
He's an interesting dude for me, and not in the same sense as Birdman. Birdman, like I wanna hear what he has to say. Oh, that was off the break. That was during the break when I talked about that. But like Birdman from Cash Money, like I'm interested in hearing what he has to say because I feel like he's seen a lot. He's lived through a lot. So I'm just like fascinated by hearing him talk.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock. I'm almost baffled by hearing him talk sometime. I'm like, what's your deal? Like, what are you really?
I think it's because The Rock talks like a politician.
Mm.
Whether that's in his future, whether that's what he wants or whatever, like The Rock became such a massive movie star that he became like he talks to people like politicians do. Mm-hmm. And now that the final boss run is on pause, he's back to doing that stuff, right? Like, and that was our conversation leading into WrestleMania. He can only abandon his social. He can only abandon the way that he is for so long. Mm. And he got to the first night of the WrestleMania press conference. Mm. And when that was over, he was back to, oh, this was great. It was blah 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 blah. He didn't break kayfabe too much, but he did. And then by the time Mania was over, he was like, I love Seth Rollins and I love Cody Rhodes. Like, he was back to, right. It's all the work, guys.
Right.
It's all the work. And right. So, I think there's always this unique thing with professional wrestlers where they spend so much of their life trying to convince people of something that, you know, people get on Hogan for being a liar. Hogan's entire life has been built on convincing you of something that's not actually true. Mm-hmm. And I think that's The Rock, being coming from a wrestling family, I think he has that certain, I'm going to make you believe what I want you to believe. Mm. Mm. And that's, I really don't know what he's about.
Right.
I know if I talk to The Rock about being black, he's going to talk the way I want him to talk. Mm. But if Will Kane is talking to him, mm-hmm. he's not going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So he's very
calculated.
He's a chameleon in that sense.
Yeah, interesting. I think, and you're right, he does talk like a politician. I think he wants to be a politician. I know what's stopping him. There's a lot of money to be made right now in entertainment for him. And I think that's what's stopping him from being a full-on politician. But I think just my feel of it is he definitely wants to be a politician in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think obviously there's money for him to be made, but I also think there's a, you would have to take a, if he ran for that party, you'd have to take a specific stance that I don't think he'd be willing to take to beat Donald Trump. Mm. And when Donald, one way or the other, is out of the way, then I could see him entering that field. Mm-hmm. But you're right. That the most he'd be taking a massive pay cut.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if a president can sell energy drinks and skincare cream.
Right.
Like my sister. Like I've loved The Rock forever. There's never like been a secret about that. My sister was shopping and sent me the Target display of his beauty line. It was like, I think that's where I draw the line. Like workout gear. Energy drinks, you know, something related to working out. I got you. But like energizing eye cream, like I'm not sure, because I look at The Rock and it's like, you know, Ryan Clark told him, like, you look like you're 50. Now Tracy Ellis Ross got a beauty line.
Come on now.
I'm wanting to get that.
Come on now.
I go get that.
Talk to me. I mean, a lot of them queens, Nia Long, a lot of them queens out there. You never know. Sanaa Lathan.
Yeah. Oh my God, Sanaa Lathan. She,
come on, they aging like fine wine. Whatever they doing, they doing it right. One other thing with wrestling, I don't think this is a secret or like big old revelation. I think people had talked about it a little bit, but I think it was like made official in some sort of way. You know, Roman's filming a movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't think it was a secret or nothing like that. But he's
what movie is it?
I don't know, but he's doing it with Keke Palmer, and Keke Palmer on her stories the other day posted like a back behind the scenes picture, and he's in it. He's some type of, it's
supposed to be like an action comedy, I think, or something like that, where he's like the bad guy in it.
So
or
he's gone.
Roman can be a leading man.
He can.
Like in the well, sense that The Rock is, Roman could be a leading man.
And I know. That during a certain moment and certain people, they really like The Rock. Trust me, they love Roman. And when I mean they, I'm talking about the women.
Oh, yeah.
They
oh,
love
I know.
Roman. I know. And when I say they,
yeah.
Hell,
no, I know.
Might be talking about the women in my house.
No.
They
I know.
Love yeah. some Roman Reigns. Yeah. So.
How do you think I got away with watching 8 hours of WrestleMania over 2 days? Yeah, I'm aware.
You think Roman came to that level where he's getting paid like The Rock in Hollywood, though?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No. No, The Rock is the
Is that
the Rock,
just because The Rock has years on him?
Yeah, The Rock is the highest paid actor in Hollywood. Yeah, no. Like that's I don't think Roman can hit rarefied air like that, but he can absolutely be a leading man in a movie.
I don't think he can get where Rock is, but I think he can get up there.
The Rock, he can. Yeah, The Rock, and hopefully,
and it's because of the women.
The plus side to it is, though, The Rock may have taken some bumps that Roman won't have to take. Because The Rock, he can go directly to Dwayne and, hey, don't do this. Mm-hmm. Like, I've already set the template. You don't have to get smaller. You don't have to get skinny. You don't have to do any of that.
Yeah.
Be you. Be what people love right now. Mm-hmm. And use that in your career. Roman is... You know, he's very good looking. He's charming. He had that commercial with the little, real daughter or not, but that was the gist of the commercial. Teapot. Yeah.
I don't know what shoes he was wearing in there. Wow.
I don't know what jeans he was wearing. I don't know what he was wearing, period.
Wearing Jordan.
He did not.
And I don't mean Jordan brand.
It was not a good look at all. But like, yeah, he has a lot of attributes that he could be a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure. I was thinking about Hogan this morning real quick because you talk about movies. Because the wife is gone and I've got the kids.
You watching No Holds Barred or something?
Well, I'm not watching that. But I have the kids and I got to organize, get everything ready, get, you know, take them to school, lunches, dinner, all this other stuff. And I just said to myself, oh, I'm like Mr. Nanny. I was like, wait a minute.
No.
That was Hogan's movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Hogan.
Yeah.
The thought of Hogan came.
Mr. Nanny was Hogan's.
I don't remember that movie, though. I just remember the title.
I don't remember Mr. Nanny either. I'm sure I saw it. I remember Suburban Commando much more.
Is Hogan ever in a good movie?
No.
No Holds Barred was bad, but I liked it.
It was so bad.
I liked it.
It was
I'd like to see
so
that
bad.
Now. And
it was so cheesy. It's so bad.
It's terrible. It's up there with, I mean, but that's how they made movies at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know
no,
what I mean?
For sure.
Remember, like, one of my favorite movies that is, like, super unrealistic?
Well, okay, Rocky III. He's in Rocky III.
He's not
the star of it.
Yeah.
But Hogan is in Rocky III. Good call from Joel right
but
there.
But it reminds me of, and I think this might have been a couple years later, but it reminds me of, remember Blank Check?
Marlon, what's Blank Check?
Blank Check is where this guy runs over this kid's bike. And he's like in a hurry or whatever. He's like, you just ran over my bike. And he's like, whatever, kid. Here, take this check and go get the fixes. And the kid writes out the check for $1 million. And he basically becomes like a kid millionaire. And
so the check cashed? The check cleared?
Yeah, I mean, but, so, you know, so it's that time, right? Like, he because the guy was rich or whatever, or whatever. But I think he was like he ended up being a bad guy. So I don't know what exactly he did. But I used to love Blank Check. But I mean,
the film follows a boy who inherits a blank check and uses it to buy a house under an alter ego.
Yeah, that's right.
But
people would want to meet him, but he had like a voice translator, or he'd sound like a grown up. But he was like a mystery guy. Nobody had seen his face. Blank Check was a good one.
But is soon being searched by several members of the bank he cashed it under.
Mr. McIntosh.
Now, Preston Waters laminates his relative lack of money compared to his entrepreneurial older brothers and working class father and investor. His situation regularly leads him to humiliating situations, including having his brother, 16-year-old Damien, and 15-year-old Ralph. Commandeer his bedroom as an office.
Didn't they work for him? I think that's what happened.
Tone Loc is in this movie.
He was. Tone Loc was a good guy. Or no, he was a, I can't remember. He might have been a bad, no, he was a bad guy. He was with the, he was like the muscle for the guy who was trying to get his money back.
Okay. All right. Well.
Nah, but like, well, Blank
Tone,
Check.
Tone Loc stars as Juice in this movie. Debbie Allen is in this movie.
I think I remember Debbie Allen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no, that's not who I thought it was.
No, there was a baddie in there, though. And he liked it. Like, he was 11 and liked this baddie. And she was a grown woman.
I think the baddie might be Karen Duffy.
That sounds about right.
Okay. All right. Well, no, I don't remember Blank Check at all. I don't think I've ever seen
that. So, the moral of the story is that was a movie that I really liked, and I liked No Holds Barred at the time, but that's there was a certain way they made movies back then, too.
I wonder what the Rotten Tomatoes review of No Holds Barred is.
Oof. Can't be
critical good. Response. The film was panned by critics with a 10% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my gosh, that's one of the worst.
Film critic Brian Orndorff described the film as tremendously crude, unapologetically manipulative, and aimed directly at easily entertained 13-year-old
yeah,
boys.
Yeah, fool. It's not for you, critic.
Yeah, that's a shoot.
I enjoyed the movie.
That is facts.
And I was like 9. What year did it come out?
It came out, I think, in 1989. Let me confirm.
I was
came
six.
Out June 2nd, 1989.
Yeah, I was 6. Yes, I love the movie, Jackass.
It is owned by WWE under Shane Distribution Company.
Oh, never knew that. Did you know about it?
I did. You know what the music line was called?
No.
Stephanie Music.
Well, look at him. Trying to give back to his kids.
Tried. He gave back to him, all right. So much so that Stephanie said,
I'm out of here. I'm gone. Not dealing with this guy.
No holds barred. I remember the match. The steel cage match with Zeus and Macho Man against.
And it wasn't even against in a with a crowd, right?
No, it was like a crowd.
I thought it was like at a studio. Didn't they try to do that? They like filmed it as a studio.
The one with Macho Man?
No, no, I mean in the movie.
In the movie, yeah, no, in the movie, yeah, it was in like a studio. Like it wasn't a real, it wasn't like a live event. No, it was in like a studio. It was, yeah, like I think Zeus tried to stab him with the ring post, if I remember correctly. I think if I remember the sequence correctly, Zeus ripped the post out, held it up over his head, and tried to stab Hulk Hogan with it. Who wasn't Hulk Hogan, he was Rip Thomas.
Rip.
Which is so fascinating because Hulk Hogan isn't real. So it was basically the fake Hulk Hogan character playing another fake character, Rick Thomas, who looked exactly and acted exactly like Hulk Hogan. But I did always love the baby blue Rip'em
classic
t-shirt.
To be honest with you, I only remember the hotel scene.
Well, yeah, that was a odd scene. I don't know.
He's getting a workout in.
He was getting a workout in.
That was crazy.
13-year-old me did not understand. I wasn't even 13. No, how old was I? I was 9.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I was 8.
Either.
I was 8 years old when this movie came out. I saw it in theaters. I did not understand.
I wonder
what
my
were.
Mom was thinking. I saw it with my mom. I wonder what she was thinking when she saw that scene. Because I was oblivious. I had no idea.
I had no clue. You know, again, that movie was aimed at us. You're 6, I'm 8. There's an attempted rape scene in that movie.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Like, yo, what are we doing? Like, watching that movie back years later, it was like, I was 9 when this movie came out. That movie, like, just like the critic said, that movie was for me. And they over here having these sexual assault scenes.
Hollywood, a crazy place.
Kids, bro. The '80s were wild.
Nah, man, it is. Hollywood was a crazy place too. Still is.
Hey, so about that playing last
night.
Yeah,
New Orleans, is that a crazy place? Or no, Philadelphia is a crazy place.
Hey, shout out Philly.
They got it.
That was a hell of a ball game last night.
That was a good game.
That was a hell of a game last night.
You know what I watched last night? I watched the Kevin Hart broadcast. It wasn't that good.
I don't think I knew that was a... They're still doing that?
Yeah, they do it periodically. Like, they didn't do it for the second game.
Oh.
But they did it for...
I guess they did it for Philly.
Yeah, probably so.
Okay.
So I was watching it. I don't want to say like it was... on. It wasn't, like, bad or nothing like that. It
was it on True TV? Where was it?
It was on The Deuce. Oh, ESPN okay. 2. That was the first time I really watched that. I know they did that during the in-season tournament championship. But sometimes I like to watch that. Like when Stephen A does his thing too. I wish, like, that's always meant for people to, like, just be candid or whatever and, like, talk, unlike the broadcast. But there's still so much at stake. You're not really being candid, right? Like, the way Kevin Hart was talking last night was not how he would have been talking about the game if the cameras were rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to see my man Darren this morning to get lined up for the live show tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I saw, you know, First Take and the different shows they got on. I think ESPN got Kimberly.
Oh.
They turned her into one of them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's my girl.
And shout out to ESPN, because I thought it was extraordinary that they found a way to work Dak Prescott into a show on April 18th.
What were they talking about?
The NFC quarterback, sorry, the NFC East quarterback under the most pressure. And it was Stephen A., who was remote, I believe he was in Los Angeles, and Kimberly. And Kimberly starts to launch into her explanation, knowing clearly Stephen A. is going to object to it. Like, he's going to have a different response. And just listening to her, it was like, she's not even making a point right now. She's retorting stuff that Stephen A. hasn't said yet on television. Like, he might have said something in their production meeting, but he hasn't said anything on television. And because she went first, she's responding to stuff that hasn't been said yet. Damn. And I was like, oh, no. They got her. Not Kimberly Martin. They got her.
Look, man, I refuse to believe it. No, she's fine. She's fine, guys.
It's the only way you get on TV there. I mean, ESPN sucks, bro. Like,
it's
garbage.
Really, it's really bad. Garbage. It was just so, it was like, no. Because every point she made, because she said Jalen. I thought every point she made was valid. But the way she delivered it, again, she was talking to Stephen A., who hadn't said anything yet. And just as a viewer, I'm like, I don't know why she's responding this way. But
now I'm gonna be like the kid in Little Big League. When she makes a good point, I'm like, yeah, there we go. See that?
I like,
see what,
hey,
she did?
Kimberly,
yeah.
Kimberly Martin is fantastic. I wanna, hey, grab my hand, girl. Like, come on, man. I'm gonna get you out. I'm gonna get you out.
See, that's the thing, though. Like, maybe Kimberly Martin's just for it, because I'm sure the paychecks are bigger that way. That's how you get on First Take and stay on First Take and stuff like that.
Damn.
Someone explain to Toxic 916. Feel like we have to explain.
The Toxic 916. No, not even explain it. We'll take a lap, bro.
Yes.
We'll take a lap, bro.
Oh,
like, no,
man.
We'll take a lap.
Run to the fence,
yeah,
and back.
Fence and back. Gosh.
Touch the line, come back. Okay. Well, so we I'm just checking our sheet here. No Dwayne Johnson, no Hulk Hogan. None of that is written in here. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna regroup.
You know what we're doing though, because I'm turned up for this game. I've been like deep diving, I'm trying to figure this thing out. And really, I might have needed that just to calm myself down.
Yeah. Well,
because I'm already anxious. I'm already anxious.
Well, you might be even more anxious because Anthony Slater at The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on No Holds Barred. He joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. We can actually bring that conversation to the air. There's no problem with that. We'll welcome our man Anthony Slater at The Athletic. He's with us. Unfortunately, Ant-Man's at the Chase Center covering exit interviews for the Golden State Warriors. You hate to see it.
What, does he have to get a root canal? Does he have to get a cap filled? Well, like, that is the dental office. That's what we call it out here, Anthony. It's a dental office. It's pretty quiet. It's pretty sterile in there, you know.
I figured this would be the event of the year for y'all.
It's not bad.
But I was yesterday.
It's the Warriors sifting through the wreckage of getting their season ended by the Sacramento Kings. Like, you two should be here. This would be the best event of the year.
We show up to the exit interviews. That'd be cold.
Ain't been to one practice all year.
That'd be cold.
Show up to the exit interviews. But bring everybody in on the – because I think it's fascinating what you just said to Anthony.
So our guy Logan Murdoch, he did a story – I think it was just about the Warriors in general and what's next or whatever. And he said, there's a quote in there where he says, some analysts believe Jonathan Kuminga could fetch more than $30 million per year on the open market, a figure that would make him the second highest player on Golden State's roster. And I was kind of unclear where his contract situation is. Did they have to, you know, do his rookie extension this year, or can they wait a year? Should they wait a year? What does that look like?
You can wait. He's under contract for $7.6 million next year. That won't change. But he's extension eligible, just like anybody. Keegan Murray, you know, it's the same draft. I am wrong on that. They're a year before. Keegan Murray, next summer, we will be having.
Davion was his draft. That's right.
Davion. Yeah. Davion extension eligible. Moses Moody extension eligible. This is the year that they coming off the title, they decided to give Jordan Poole the 4 years, $123 million. Now he was still worth $3.9 million the next season, but you locked him in, eventually trading him. So they have a choice to make. That usually comes down in October, right before Halloween, if you do or don't extend. But, you know, considering how the Poole thing went, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a little bit more careful. But the truth is, yeah, he will get expensive two seasons from now. They just got to decide, you want to lock him in now or go to restrictive free agency the following summer?
Draymond going to swing on him.
If oh, yeah. You know what time it is. Watch out in training camp, Jonathan. You know the hands vibes.
Up. Keep your hands up at all times, brother.
You know the vibes.
Keep your hands up at
I'm
all times.
I'm not going there. I'm not going there.
You know, one of the things that I heard that might sound a little off, but I actually see the vision is, and I think it was our guy Guru, he was just breaking down like how the Warriors believe and the coaching staff and all this other stuff, you can't play Wiggins and Kuminga at the same time. Like, they just do too many of the same things. It doesn't really work. And you've got to choose between one or the other. And obviously, in a perfect world, you would move on from Wiggins. But because of his contract and sometime of his spotty play or whatever, he may be tougher to move on from. And if you want to talk about improving this team, you might be able to get more if you move on from Jonathan Kuminga and still keep Wiggins around. Is that something that you've heard? Is it something that makes sense at all? Because as good as I think Kuminga is, I don't think he's going to be like, I don't think he's franchised. I think he's just a really good young player. And I think if they're trying to, you know, extend that window with Steph Curry, a really good young player is not good enough. I think they're looking for like a needle mover. What do you think about that thought of moving on from Kuminga, because it might fetch you more in a trade scenario?
Well, I think to a few of your points, like the Wiggins-Kuminga pairing actually worked when Draymond came back and played center. You have to go small. Kuminga has to be a small ball four, give him more space. But, you know, those lineups really worked. When you had a center next to those two, it didn't. That pairing was rough when Draymond was suspended, really. But that derailed a large part of their season anyways. I agree with your overall assessment, you know, that Wiggins to me will be a salary they'll potentially look to move this summer. But Kuminga, of course, would fetch more value at $7 million next season. And you would theoretically be sending him to a team that's looking to rebuild. Obviously, he's more of a rebuilding piece. But that's what the next month's about. They have a lot of choices to make. Chris Paul's $30 million non-guaranteed that they can wipe off the books, or they can use it as a vehicle to get, you know, like another salary player from another team, or, you know, theoretically, you know, also Klay Thompson's future. You got to look at that too. So everything I think they will reassess and are reassessing. That's literally, you know, the GM just talked, Mike Dunleavy just talked about that. And I think everything's up in the air, including, you know, Kuminga could be on the table. But the one thing I will say, you know, the guy who signs the checks here is a fan of Jonathan Kuminga. Was part of the drafting of Jonathan Kuminga, and I don't think we'll just as easily be like, oh, you know, chess piece to move elsewhere. Like, he has probably a higher future opinion than Kuminga than most people have.
Well, Anthony, you know, is probably better than most what happens when the owner's a fan of somebody.
Hey, let's go down the list.
You know what happens?
Well, we know that matters, right? That is like vital to organizational decision making, and yes, you guys know better than me, correct?
He will be getting contracts. They're like, wait, what? I thought we were all in agreement. We wanted him out of here, but the owner was a fan, and well,
there you are. Were you surprised by what happened Tuesday?
I mean, I'm surprised it was like a runaway. I think the Vegas line had it as like 2 or something like that. I thought it was going to be a close game. I was telling people in the lead up, I thought it was going to be a little scoring. I think there was probably an outside notion from people that weren't watching the Kings on a nightly basis that they were this, like, you know, up and down team still, that it was going to be 125-120. And it was like, this is not who they've been for 2 months, right? Yeah. Mike Brown has changed who they are defensively, and the personnel has forced them to. Keon Ellis has risen, no Monk, no Herder. So I thought you were going to be looking at something that was like 105-102 late. They always played close games. And I just thought it was going to come down to who screwed up at the end, because both teams had been screwing up at the end. But the Kings just ran away with it, and the Warriors just looked toasted, exhausted at the end of a long season. And I think that was my largest takeaway. And then spin it forward, and I'm sure you guys want to talk Kings Pelicans. Like, I want to see how that defense shows up in New Orleans.
Yeah, and that's the That's really the thing with this version of the Kings now, since, you know, not so much Monk, but since Herter's gone out and Keon has stepped into the starting lineup, they started to get tenacious on the defensive end. And, you know, I love what I'm seeing. I got an inkling that it's part of their identity right now and will be moving forward. It's more of a Mike Brown type team, but, you know, I'm still a little reserved to be like, oh, they're fixed defensively forever now. I'm still waiting on that, but that is kind of the story of this team right now. And what's going on is the way they play on the defensive end, and particularly on the perimeter with Keon, with Keegan, with Davion off the bench, and I think with De'Aaron Fox too, what he's able to do on the defensive end. That has been one of the stories of this team in the last month or so.
I think Keon Ellis would be the starting two guard even if Kevin Herter hadn't got hurt. I think it was trending that way, right? You guys watched it on a nightly basis. You already felt it tilting that way. And then the other night, I'm not saying Keon Ellis is going to be an all-defensive guard, but that was an all-defensive guard performance. What was it? 5 steals, 3 blocks, bothered Steph Curry most of the game, was on Curry at times, was off. He had that that block weak side. Yeah. I think it was at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah,
got his floater. Like, that was like elite stuff. That was, you know, some of the stuff Derek White's been doing, like a Marcus Smart, like big time playoff game. Like, he blew up the Warriors offense. Mm. And you have De'Aaron Fox, who for a star guard, high usage guard, is about as, you know, disruptive. He kind of reminds me of Shea, which is interesting because that might be the first round series, right? Mm. The way Shea is very high in the league in steals despite the high usage. That's a really good, like, twosome to bother a team, especially when you're allowed to play as physical as you have been lately in the NBA and certainly in the playoffs. The question mark is still backside, no rim protection. Sabonis as your center limits you. But that's why Mike Brown did what he did the other night, right? He's blitzing Steph Curry. He's doubling. He's getting out. He's kind of using exotic schemes to bother an offense. Now, the Pelicans are different. What I do like about this matchup compared to the other ones is Mike Brown has a few days now knowing Zion's out. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to game plan for Zion. He can suddenly go, hey, Keon Ellis, lock into the CJ McCollum matchup. Mm. You know, what are ways you can take away Trey Murphy? Like, that's where he can use all of his attention. Whereas if Zion was playing, like, you can't talk much about Trey Murphy and CJ. You got to focus in on Zion. So I think if you're going to win, if the Kings are going to win Friday night, it's going to be by like kind of locking up the Pelicans, because the Pelicans can defend right back. Mm-hmm.
And the tough part about, we're talking about Keon and singing his praises from the other night, and these two teams, the Warriors and the Kings, hadn't played since January 25th, and we had believed these teams were different. The Warriors were different. Certainly the Sacramento Kings were different.
Yeah.
The Kings and Pelicans played on April 11th. Like, they played with Keon. Like, they and the result was the same. It was the same as the other four games. Like, they're 0-5 now. What has to be different for it to not be 0-6 for Sacramento?
Well, I don't know, because every time I'm in the building, the Pelicans look like an NBA champion.
They
blew the Warriors
facts
out a bunch this season. The next night after McCollum hits 9 threes and they blow the Kings out, I came down to a big Warriors-Pelicans game, which, by the way, if the Warriors win that, they're the 8th seed, and you never even see Kings-Warriors. The Pelicans blew them out. And I'm like, this is the best team ever if I'm in the building.
So I got an idea. How about you don't get on this flight to New Orleans?
Yeah, stay here.
Why don't you stay your happy ass right there at the Chase Center?
I'm good. But
he said, I'm going to New Orleans. Stop playing with me.
Yeah, I do. I do think the fact that there's no Zion, like, he's been, even when he's not scoring a bunch, he's just like, every time you go to a pregame Kings-Pelicans game, like, that's what Mike Brown's talking about. Like, mm-hmm. their scheme to stop Zion, and then suddenly it is CJ McCollum open for more threes. It's Trey Murphy bombing from 26 feet away. Like, that's just not the game plan. So can you just limit CJ McCollum's open looks? Can you keep a body on Trey Murphy? Can you try not to allow Jose Alvarado to have as much of an imprint on the game as he's had in some of them? We'll see. But some might just come down to hitting shots too, right? Does Trey Murphy just instead miss 5 of those deep threes? Does Keegan Murray get hot again? I mean, that, like, I hadn't seen him have a game like that in a long time.
Yeah, Keegan, what he did in that Warriors game, we talked about it yesterday. It was like one of those things where there have been some question marks about Keegan, and not if he's a good player or not, but, like, man, we all had a lot of expectations for him. Is he going to be able to reach that, or is he just this type of player? And usually I'm not like, hey, one game just changes everything. But it felt like, at least for me, you saw a justification for everything the Kings had talked about going into the season and what they hoped, and De'Aaron working with Keegan, and like, no, he's really got this and that, this and that. In the brightest stage so far on in this season, he showed up, and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll give him a little more time, because I think he might have something like, maybe not 32 a night, but like that type of aggressiveness and shot making on a regular basis.
It's always a really good sign for young players when their games get better in the playoffs. And this isn't just a one game sample for Keegan Murray. You guys remember the first round series last year. You know, he was a little bit shell shocked, it seemed, the first three games, to the point that I remember going into, I think it was game four in Chase, where I'm at, there was a question of like, would Mike Brown replace him in the starting lineup? Would he have the quick hook? And then that night he played really well, and I think he played like 40 minutes. And if you look at his game log in that series, it went from like lower 30s, 20 minutes to 40 by the end of the series, which to me showed like, no, Mike Brown believes in him on the playoff stage, and he elevates his game in those type of scenarios. And we saw it again the other night. I'm not, like you said, I'm not just like saying, okay, he's definitely going to now score 32 in every playoff game, but I just, those are always very good signs for young players, because oftentimes it goes the other way, right? You can, you've got a lot of players in this league that do a lot in the regular season, and suddenly playoff time, more physical, different style of game, they shrink a little bit. I mean, not that y'all want to get too deep into it, but this has been a question about Domantas Sabonis really his entire career going back to Indy. You know, what does his game do on the playoff stage? So it's good. It's good that Keegan Murray seems to be going that way.
And it felt, you know, going back to, you know, Tuesday, it felt deliberate. Like, when you look at what Keegan did in the first half, it looked like it was deliberate and intentional. Like, he's going to be aggressive. He's going to be a factor in this game. He was really, really aggressive right out the gate in the first quarter.
Yeah, like, that completely flipped the game. And you could tell early that the Warriors weren't sharp, because it was like Clay would get caught on a screen, and then Keegan Murray would get open for three, and Clay and Draymond would be looking at each other like, was that you? Was that me? And I think that punched the Warriors in the mouth a little bit. And like, that's what Keegan has to be. There's no Malik Monk, no Kevin Herter. They can still be a good team because they've gotten better defensively. Honestly, losing those two guys in a weird way, like, does make you better defensively, but you got to still score a certain amount of points to win an NBA game. And I think a lot of those points have to come from him, because I don't think Sabonis is suddenly going to explode for 30, right? He's going to just get his normal amount of numbers. Somebody's got to get 12 of those Monk points that are no longer there. Pretty much got to be Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Anthony Slater, one of the hardest working men in the game right now, because he's got him covering two teams all over the place. And I've had this discussion a couple of times, and we had it again yesterday. The future of this Kings team and what they're trying to build, it's the second year of this quote unquote program they're trying to put together, you know, and they're being compared to, you know, other teams who have been at this for 4, 5, 6 years, right? Like, you should be where they're at. Well, the Kings are at the beginning of what they're trying to do. And a lot of people look at, if they're not able to make the playoffs, is this being a failure as a season? And I would definitely say you wouldn't reach the goal for sure. There's no doubt about that. But the way that they've transformed themselves in the last month or so, with finding a guy like Keon Ellis and essentially finding your defensive guy and your two guard and transforming how this team plays, more of a defensive team in the mold of Mike Brown. Do you think you can still pull out some positives to this series, even if you don't win on Friday night, if you miss the playoffs? So there's still some things that you can say, man, we missed our goal, but we figured some things out. We learned some things about ourselves, and now we can kind of mold our franchise around what we learned in these last couple months.
Yeah, I mean, look, they won 48 games last year. They won 46 games this season. De'Aaron Fox, I think, in the Mike Brown era, has taken his game to another level. Another guy who I think shows really well in the playoffs, just like his game fits that. You know, this season you found Ellis. I think you did miss on some of the margins, the Vezenkovs, the Duartes, like some of that stuff hasn't worked. There's going to need to be some sharpening around the core. If you lose this game, you do keep your first round pick. It's kind of interesting how that goes. And, you know, they have not emptied the cupboard, right? The first round pick cupboard that they have, and, you know, made a big trade, which I still think is on the table with the various salaries that they have. But yeah, I think like this franchise is in a healthier, more positive place than they've been since the, I mean, this isn't a revelation, but the Chris Webber, Mike Bibby era, right? I mean, like, it's two straight mid 40 win seasons. I think if you wanted to have a conversation or an argument about could this core ever be a true title contender, I could hear no and I could hear yes, depending on like what type of trade might be available. But okay, let's say over the next 4 or 5 seasons, the Fox Sabonis core is a mid 40s to low 50s win teams that, depending on the season and depending on how good the conference is, you're maybe up to a 3-4 seed, down to a 7-8 seed playing through the play-in. Like, I think that's a good result. I think that's great basketball in Sacramento. I think that's fun nights where you go and watch these great play-in games. And if stuff breaks right, like the Memphis Grizzlies are a great example, right? The grit and grind era. They never won a title. They never went to the finals. They got to, I think, 1, maybe 2 West finals. They had these 7-game wars. Now they're retiring Marc Gasol's number, and Zebo is a local legend, and Tony Allen, and like that's viewed very positively locally. It made people a ton of money. It established that brand and that franchise there. Mm-hmm. And that might be what's going on with the Kings. I would guess, if you told me, do you think they're going to win a title or not over the next decade? I would probably say no. But I think they have a lot of really good, fun basketball going on there that they certainly did not have the last 15 plus years. Yeah.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.